Toyota says don't blame them for all those sticky gas pedals.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Toyota now says at least some of those unintended acceleration crashes may have been the driver's fault. It was just a couple of months ago Toyota recalled about 8 million vehicles because of the malfunctions. Alisa Roth covers the auto industry for Marketplace, and she joins us live. Good morning.
Good morning.
Toyota says the crashes were the driver's fault. How did it come to that conclusion?
Well, Toyota says that in most of the cases they've looked at carefully, the driver was actually flooring the accelerator rather than hitting the brakes. The government's also been looking into the claims, and it hasn't officially released its results yet. But the Wall Street Journal's reporting that federal investigators are coming up with similar findings.
So what are we saying, Alisa? The charges against Toyota were a big mistake? They're off the hook now?
You know, unfortunately for Toyota, probably not. First of all, these results are all from investigations of relatively recent crashes. It's just harder to get solid data on crashes that happened a longer time ago. The other thing is that even Toyota agrees it did have some problems with faulty accelerator pedals. These are pedals that didn't come back up as fast as they should have. And remember, there were also those floor mats that were getting stuck under pedals.
Right, right. So what do you think? Will these findings restore Toyota's reputation?
I think it'll depend in part on what the rest of the investigations turn up. And then it's going to depend on how the company handles it. Certainly, Toyota was criticized very harshly for its initial handling of the crisis. And I think in part, the question will be how it deals with this next round.
Okay, Marketplace's Alisa Roth covers the auto industry for us. Alisa, thank you.
You're welcome.
Remember the White House Jobs Summit last December where President Obama pledged to help businesses create jobs? Well, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce says it didn't work. So today, the business lobby is holding its own Jobs Summit. We get that story from reporter Kathy Ducham.
What's the best way to create jobs? And the uncertainty about the economy. That's according to the U.S. Chamber's Stan Anderson. He says lingering questions lead businesses to hold back on making investments.
They're concerned that we may be going back into a double-dip recession. They're concerned that they don't know what their tax rates are going to be next year. They don't know what's going to happen to these regulations that are going to be imposed on them.
Anderson says the Obama administration needs to take action, sign trade agreements to boost exports, ease up on new regulations, and most important, don't let those Bush administration tax cuts expire. Economist Joshua Shapiro with MFR Financial says low taxes are good, but there's no quick fix.
The problem is that a lot of this requires just patience and an understanding that, you know, we didn't get ourselves into this mess overnight and we're not going to get out of it overnight.
But with midterm elections this fall, there's no such thing as patience. I'm Kathy Ducham for Marketplace.
Stock investors are showing a little faith lately. Let's do the numbers. Shares in Europe are mixed now, but Asian markets rose today following yesterday's performance in New York. Earnings season has gotten off to a good start with Alcoa and railroad operator CSX reporting good news. After the bell last night, Intel showed its biggest profit in a decade and came out with an improved forecast. We'll see how Wall Street reacts to that today. The Dow Industrials ended yesterday with a 146-point gain and a close of 10,363.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, offering Save the Game, a financial literacy app for children designed for iPod Touch and iPhone, available on the App Store. And by Reputation Defender, helping doctors, lawyers, and small business owners monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. ReputationDefender.com/market.
The oldest freeway in the car-loving state of California sits right outside our Marketplace studios, and it definitely is showing its age. The road is getting some much-needed structural repairs. Reporter Eve Tro says it is also getting some cosmetic work done, and with California in a budget crisis, that has raised eyebrows.
The Pasadena Freeway hasn't changed much since it was built 60 years ago, with narrow lanes made for slower cars. Today, it's an infamous Los Angeles driving challenge. Just getting on it is harrowing. It doesn't have on-ramps, only stop signs.
All right, passenger has to be lookout, okay?
All right, after the second car here. All right, go, 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 go.
Okay, okay.
My God.
Rico and I made it on okay, but that's just the beginning of this road's issues.
There's places where there's no fencing, there's places where there's no walls, where it just looks like it's abandoned.
Dolly Colorado has lived most of her life near this freeway on the east side of L.A. She's thrilled the government is spending $17 million to make it safer, with new medians and concrete sidewalls, because she likes the ride.
You can see the river, there's all this greenery, there's all these parks.
It's so pretty. The road's been named a National Scenic Byway. And that means another change. The Pasadena Freeway is going back to its maiden name, the Arroyo Seco Parkway. All the signs have to be changed. It's costing taxpayers $650,000. A lot of Angelenos say that's way too much, like Jackie Gibson.
Did we vote on it? I didn't. I mean, there's better things we can do with that $650,000.
But the California Department of Transportation says the money came from a grant earmarked only for this project. Judy Gish is a spokesperson.
Funds from the Federal Highway Administration would not be able to be diverted to be used to fund schools.
Resident Dolly Colorado agrees it's expensive, but she sees how the new, old name could attract visitors.
Open up Sunset Magazine and it's like, come to historic Arroyo Seco Parkway, you know.
But she says probably only tourists would call it that. Locals will likely keep using the road's least romantic moniker, the 110. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And finally, congratulations to Joan Ginther of Bishop, Texas. Last month, she won $10 million in the Texas lottery, which is a big improvement over 2008, when she only won $3 million in the Texas lottery, and 2006, when she won a mere $2 million in the Texas lottery. But it's not as good as 1993, when Joan won $11 million in the Texas lottery. Now, statistically, you shouldn't play the lottery. The odds of this happening are 1 in 18 septillion, which you would think Joan Ginther would have understood since she is a former math professor. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.